We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network. Good afternoon and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery is located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. And speaking of energy, let's give them a call. Buy a generator. They got lots to choose from down there, and it is that time of the year when
it's always that time of the year.
PG&E could throw the switch on us, and you're going to be in the dark. So,
or you could listen to the rest of Jesus' story, and you could figure out it's the darkness is coming.
The darkness is coming.
Winter is coming.
Yeah. That's a whole new meaning to the dark ages.
So, I know we kind of hustled you there at the end.
No problem.
But that is a number I wanted people to have time to just sit on for a second. So
let me throw out a couple of other numbers.
Yeah, start with that at the beginning and reiterate that for folks.
Let me come back to that number. I just want to close the RPS that we created. So we were all the way up to 33%. In 2015, and I'll do this quickly, in 2015, Governor Brown signed Senate Bill 350, which moved the RPS to 50%. And again, renewable portfolio standard means that at least 50% of your power has to come from renewable resources. And that target was moved by 2030. 3 years later, he wasn't happy with 50%. We moved that target again to 60%, but this time 60% by 2030. So we appreciated the time from 50% to 60%, so by 10% by 2030, but with a mandate of 100% renewables by 2045. So that's where that 19.61 cent average becomes really, really critical, because now we have to figure out, okay, well, what would it take to get us all the way to 100% renewables? So we have this moving target, and basically that's what I wanted to illustrate in quickly moving through those numbers. So we started in 2002 with 17%, and now we are all the way up to 100%. And it took us just a few short years to move the needle that much. The crazy thing, or I guess maybe not say the crazy thing. I want to say the crazy thing, but too late. I already said it out loud. The crazy thing is that we don't even know how to get to 30%. And we've already moved it to 100%. And so the studies have begun, and I've got some really great friends at different think tanks that have started tackling these issues. And I've participated in some of those studies. And the latest study that came out suggests, and this was done, and the reason that I'm going to quote these guys is because they prepared this study for the California Energy Commission, and they give us a really good outline, so I'll share that outline first. So at present, and remember, we got to get to 100% renewables by 2045. And just like in 2002, when we thought 17%, no problem. You know, it's only 2002. By 2010, no problem. We can get there. And just like we said later in 2010, yeah, by 2020, that's 10 years. No problem. We can get there. And now we're saying it again. It's 2020. By 2045, come on, we can get there. Well, the problem is that we haven't moved very much since 2000. So what makes us think that we're going to get there by 2045? The challenge becomes, we keep exacerbating the problem. And here's the real challenge. And these are real numbers that are up to date. Right now, we get 34% of our energy from natural gas resources. So we're talking about doing away with all of those. We get another 9% from the nuclear facility that's still open, the 2,500 megawatts I spoke about earlier. We're going to do away with that. So when you add 34 and 9, that's a massive number. How are we going to replace that much what I will call base load energy? That's the kind that I can flip a switch and it's available. How are you going to replace that much?
And that's just going to get us back to where we are today.
And that's just getting us right back to where we are today, exactly. So unless there is a mass exodus from California, which if I talk to some of my friends, they tell me, Jesus, that might happen. But there's the other friends who say, well, no, it's not going to be that much of a mass exodus. There will be some exodus. But we're not going to lose so much load that California would start to look like Montana. That's not going to happen. It's not going to look like Wyoming. We're going to have a lot more people than that here. So how are we going to produce the power? Or are we going to say, come to California, you only have power part of the time because when the sun goes down, we got nothing for you. And that's the challenge right now. And this is the study that my friends at E3 did. And again, this was a study that was done for the California Energy Commission. So this is a state entity that asked for a view of what it was going to take. And Energy and Environmental Economics, a very prominent firm that does a lot of work for the state of California, in this kind of study said it's going to be very expensive to get there. And to get to 100% renewables, it's going to take another $66 to $74 billion annually. $66 to $74 billion annually means more to deliver your power because we have to overbuild the system by four times in order to achieve that 100% renewable. So at $66 billion, that's an extra 17 cents per kilowatt hour added to your current bill.
Mm-hmm.
So assuming all things stay equal, all things stay the same, remember right now the average, so it's an average size home. If you don't have an average size home, here's what makes you not average. You have a pool. Here's what makes you not average. You have a hot tub.
Oh, wow.
Here's what makes you not average. You're over 2,000 square feet. Now you're no longer average. So that's a lot of the communities that are in Northern California, right?
Sure. You have a well. Area. I mean, you know, wells
you have a
take
well,
electricity.
You have a pump.
Jeez.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the average rate is 19.61 cents today. Today, if we just added $66 billion, that's another 17 cents per kilowatt hour. So if we're talking about protecting, because I hear this all the time from legislators, we need to protect those ratepayers, those poor ratepayers. What are they going to do? Hey, by legislative and regulatory fiat, you've already crushed them.
Right.
The only thing that they have to lean on right now is that I don't care because I'll be gone by the time those prices hit them. Well, I think that that's super, super bad way of doing business.
Oh, sure.
Because you're walking away from the from all of those things that you imposed, and you're going to leave that to somebody else for somebody else to deal with. Or is there going to be a future legislature that is going to be brave enough to say this? All of those things that our predecessors did were stupid, and we have to undo some of them because there's no way that people are going to be able to pay that much money.
So what do you tell people, you know, when they hear this, they say, well, I'm going to go out and put solar on my roof and then I won't be impacted by that. I'll get all my energy from solar panels.
Yeah. I have these arguments with people, and when I'm at Home Depot or Lowe's and I get the well-meaning young folks or middle-aged folks that come to me and they say, do you have solar on your roof? Can I tell you about the program that I'm selling? Sometimes I'm in a good mood, very rarely, and I say, tell me about what you're doing. And they start telling me lies. And I have to tell you, there are very few really honest solar installers that are going to give you the truth. Solar on your roof works if you have batteries associated with that solar array that you might put on your roof. And if you don't have batteries, it's not going to work. Here's why. Because that solar array is still attached to the utility that provides power to you. If you have solar on your roof And PG&E is providing you electrical resources, electric service, because you are only offsetting what you are, what you need on a daily basis at your home. So let's just say, for the sake of argument and for the sake of simplicity, you need 100 kilowatts. That's not a normal number. So I'm just using this number as for simplicity's sake. If you need 100 kilowatts and your solar array is going to produce 90% or 90 of it, let's just say 90, you're still going to buy 10 kilowatts from the utility. The 10 kilowatts are what you need to run your refrigerator, to watch your TV, to turn on your lights in the evening from about 8 o'clock in the summer till about 5 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning. You're going to need PG&E's 10 kilowatts. Just, again, this is just for simplicity's sake, right? So you're still buying energy from the utility. Well, I'm not buying 100 of it. Okay, that's good. That might work. But guess what happens when the utility unplugs your service?
Hold
because
on.
Because you're connected to the grid.
Let's cliffhanger that one. We gotta. Okay, sure. Sorry, I have to cliffhanger you again.
Okay, no problem.
We're becoming tardy. We will be right back. Our guest is Jesus Arredondo. I hope you're enjoying this. You can find the archive after the fact. I would send it to all your friends, family, and especially the people who love renewable power. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area, KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
When you're in the dark and you want to see, you need a...
electricity, electricity.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a...
electricity, electricity.
Every room can now be lit with just a...
electricity, electricity.
Where do you think it all comes from, this powerful...
electricity, electricity.
And that's the $64,000 question. Where does it all come from? Okay, so Jesus, I'm sorry we had to unceremoniously split your information on the solar panels that are supposedly changing everyone's world and making them not pay for power, which is fiction.
Not exactly true. That is the end all and solve all for us. So if you are connected to the grid, or if you have solar panels and you don't have a mass array of batteries, or at least some batteries, when PG&E has a public safety power shutoff, guess what? You will have no power. But I have solar panels, Jesus. That doesn't matter. You're still connected to the grid. The grid is not bi-directional. This is the biggest lie of the solar panel installers, especially the ones that really don't know what they're doing. They'll sell you a bill of goods that says, well, you get to sell the power back to the utility. Not true. Your power can't go back. It only stays at your place. So your power is really, your solar panels are really only offsetting what you are producing. You are not actually selling anything to the grid. That is totally patently false. Now, if you, again, let me repeat this. If you have solar panels and you don't have batteries installed, meaning batteries associated with your solar panels on your roof, when PG&E calls its next PSPS, you're going to lose power.
So even though you have power generation on your roof, if the grid goes down, you still go down.
Correct.
Oh, now see, I didn't know that.
Surprise!
Yeah. Biggest shock to most people. But I thought I wasn't going to lose power. I have power on my roof. The utility still connects, controls your power. You are connected to the utility. So long as you're still taking even one electron from the utility controls the resources to your home.
Now, if you have...
The grid is... If you have batteries and you have a system that allows you to disconnect from the utility so that you can then use your battery resources. Now, it's more than just having the battery. It's having the system that allows you to disconnect from the utility and to discharge your batteries to your home. The problem with most batteries today is that, you know, how long are you going to need power? I don't know. How long is the PSPS going to last? In some cases, in Northern California, it's lasted up to 2 and 4 days. In some cases, it's lasted longer. I don't know of a battery system right now that anybody in a normal home could afford that would take you through more than 8 hours.
Right.
So if you thought you were going to need it for more than 8 hours, you're talking about spending $100,000 on batteries.
Well, you could run the batteries at night and solar panels during the day if you could disconnect, correct?
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
You need the ability to disconnect from the utility in order to do that.
And I'm assuming that that's a
added
much, it's a much higher cost to put in a system like that.
And there are people who you know, if you have the extra $100,000 to put in that kind of system, then, you know, those are the people that are able to do that. But if you're simply just putting on some solar panels and thinking that you've checked the box, you have not checked the box.
Interesting.
And the typical solar panels that are going on homes today are of the $40,000 size, and those won't do the trick. So that's unfortunate reality of solar panels today. It's not that technology is not there, certainly not as it's sold in a number of the advertisements that I see. I wish that the Public Utilities Commission would come down on those. On those companies a little bit harder, because it is completely misleading and at best. And so if they were at least, and now maybe they hand you a binder's worth of fine fine literature, meaning that superscript literature that says, by the way, none of this is true. In which case they check the box and they save themselves from litigation. And it's very likely that that's included in your package. I would just say read your package super, super carefully, because most likely that kind of language is included and you're not buying what you thought you bought.
Yeah. Yeah. But a lot of people don't realize that those panels are not going to work when the grid goes down.
So the idea that we can just exist in California on solar and wind, you and I had a conversation about wind. I don't know where you want to work that in, but we really should give people the heads up on that, because they think, oh, you just put up a what do you call it? You know, a windmill, and you got power.
Yeah, so again, these are the problems and the nuances with our renewable system today. We categorize, let's just take a quick look at wind. We categorize wind on a wind regime range of 0 to 5. 5 being the best wind regime, 0 being wind non-existent. So you're not going to see investment in a zero wind regime. That's you'd be throwing away your money. But in a 3.5 to 5 wind regime, you know, you're starting to see people spend money. The wind regimes that are 5, meaning the most optimal locations, there's probably 3 locations like that in throughout California. The Altamont Pass, the Tehachapis, and there's an area just east of Lancaster that is really, really good for wind. If we're talking about any other area in the state of California, the wind regimes are much, much lesser. And so the amount of wind resource that you might need to put up in those areas would have to be a significant number more wind turbines in order to get your money out of it. But it also means that you're going to expose yourself to that much more potential for harm of avian, you know, patterns of migration, or you're going to be disruptive of other things. And full disclosure here, I've been at this on my own capacity with my own firm since 2004. I have represented all kinds of generation resource types. Wind enjoys a special kind of regulatory challenge in that typically it has to be at altitude in order for it to work better. So you have to pull what are called take permits in case you accidentally take out a protected avian species of some kind. Eagles, primarily condors. We have done such a great job of protecting the condor that the populations have, believe it or not, increased significantly, and so have their migration patterns. So more birds, they're flying further in other places that we didn't realize they used to fly to. The secret is that they always flew to those areas, but because their populations had gone down, we didn't realize that they were flying in those areas. In some reviews that I have seen, environmentalists suggest, oh, well, they're flying there now. And then other environmentalists suggest, no, they always flew there, but their population numbers were so far down that we forgot that they used to do that. So numbers are all over the place. But you deal with even terrestrial issues as well. You've got not only the protected critters on the ground, you also have endangered blades of grass, believe it or not. You have endangered flowers,
bushes that
bloom in areas that you would never imagine. I encountered this. I didn't realize this, but you know, there is naturally occurring asbestos at altitude throughout California. And asbestos, there is a little tiny flower. It's purple, and it's called the monkey flower, and it grows on asbestos. It thrives on asbestos. Who knew? Who knew? Not only is the asbestos, obviously asbestos, we can't disturb that, but the flower is protected. So if you were trying to build a wind turbine at altitude, which is where they work, and you encounter naturally occurring asbestos, now you have to worry about the monkey flower, too.
We're living in hell.
Only in California.
Yeah. Welcome to California.
I love to quote my
old friend Michael Picker, who is the former immediate past president of the Public Utilities Commission. I once asked him this. We had a regulatory proceeding that was outlining where you could build renewable power and where we were not going to be allowed to build renewable power because of the protected species in those areas. And I said, so what about the existing projects that are already being developed in those areas that we're about to exclude? And he said, well, they should think about it. And I said, so, but the project is, you know, 25% already in development. What are they supposed to do? And he said this to me, and I'm using his quote because I told him I would, and I've used it time and again, so. But I love it because it's true. I think it's really, really true, and I appreciated the fact that he was honest with me. And he said this. He said, Jesus, I'm not saying they can't build there. I'm just saying that they can expect a special kind of hell if they try.
Wow.
So that's California for you.
Yep, there you go.
Oh, my gosh. We'll be right back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams on which I'm dying are the best I ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area, KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Who is it?
Hello?
I'm going crazy during the day. I mean, this stuff's blowing my mind.
I told Bill, I go, wait until you hear what he's going to tell you about all this. Jesus, you know, we talked a little. You mentioned the wind thing and the zones, or I already forgot what it's called. Obviously, I'm an incredible student. But the Fountain Wind Project is here locally, and I don't get into a whole bunch of local issues. However, people can go to, and I will look it up to verify, but I think it's fountainwind.com. But they want to put like 76 more turbines up on the hill here.
Up on Hatchet.
And we're in what kind of a, I mean, we talked a little bit about this, so I guess I'm not, you know, asking you to do this on the fly, but... Give him a little thumbnail on. Can you give him a little thumbnail on that and how that's going to work out?
So I would say that because of the lower wind regime where you are, it's probably at best it's a 3, and if they're selling it as anything more than a 3 wind regime, I would be shocked. Typically the financing side of a project does. A pretty good job at kicking the tires and understanding their ability to recover their financial investment, and so sometimes these projects don't go anywhere because they start to look at, you know, how long is it going to be before I get the return on my investment, and because projects that are smaller, and as large as this project is, believe it or not, it's a small project.
Okay.
They tend to attract harder to come by financing. So I would look at it from this vantage point, and I don't mean to disparage the folks that are working on the project, because I'm sure that they're working really, really hard to make all the numbers work and to orient the wind turbines in the right direction and to optimize the project as much as possible. There are several challenges that I see in projects like that, and having worked in Northern California on wind projects that were eventually abandoned once the reviews were done, and they get abandoned for this reason. One, how challenging is it going to be to build the project? What is it going to take from an environmental perspective so you get your EIR, your Environmental Impact Report? And you have to go through in California, you have to also go through a CEQA process, the California Environmental Quality Act review, and it's exhaustive. It's really exhaustive, if not almost prohibitive. And then you have, assuming that all of the other things check off and that your financing is coming in order, then you have your legal challenges. You have your environmental groups that don't want you to build. And you wind up with lawsuit after lawsuit, or if you're lucky, it's only one giant lawsuit from somebody like, say, the Center for Biological Diversity. And Center for Biological Diversity, to be fair to them, they don't only sue generation projects. They sometimes sue farmers because of grazing issues, for example.
All the time.
There's a very famous case where I think it was the only and first time that Center for Biological Diversity went to court and actually lost. But it's about 100 lawyers. They're headquartered in Arizona, and they've made a living filing lawsuits in California on generation and filing lawsuits on grazing for farmers throughout the West. But they're very good at what they do. They're very, very good at what they do. I've encountered them on several occasions, and they will typically come into a project like, for example, this project up in your area. And they would drop 600 pages on it, and they would say, answer all of those questions as part of your CEQA review. And the challenge for the project is that they actually have to try. And in some cases, it's arbitrary and capricious what's being required of them. So a judge will throw it out, but if nothing more, it slows down the process, which means it's going to cost you more money. And it might actually scare away the financing. The first things first, though, is it a good wind regime? And that's the first thing that I think the financing side of this project will do. And if it's good enough, you know, how good is it? And so for folks that are just local folks that want to see, you know, some of the questions that I would ask for having done these kinds of projects is, where's the money actually coming from? Typically, it's a hedge fund or it's a bank, as we like to call it, but it's, you know, call it a hedge fund. There's a lot of money that's coming from overseas right now, trying to get a foothold in what California is doing. They see us as a huge, huge, you know, elephant in the room of worth of opportunity for investment because California already decided we're going to 100% renewables. So the first entrants are actually going to make their money back, regardless of how great the project is or how crazy the project idea actually is. They're going to make their money. So those are, I think those are the cautionary words that I would throw out. In the case of this particular project, I would say the further north you go, the harder the wind regime is to build. So will it get built? I don't know. I have not spent any time, honestly, reviewing that project. I haven't looked at it at all. I can only tell you that a little bit further south, and maybe a lot further south, on the Colusa Lake County line, there was a project there that I was involved in that eventually was abandoned. There was one a little bit further south again from there in the Zamora Hills area, and that project was eventually abandoned as well. And so I mentioned those two projects because all three of those projects have almost the exact peripheral on wind classification. So will this one that you're talking about be abandoned? I don't know. I can't tell you that for sure, but with a similar wind profile and similar challenges with avian take permits that may be required, it's going to have some challenges.
What is you say it's a wind regime of three? What's typically
Like if you were going to invest,
yeah, what,
if we had
what
a pile of money
for?
And we were going to push in on a project, it's got to be
you
what?
Want a five.
You want a five.
Five.
Okay. Okay.
You
All
want
right.
a five. You're going to get your money back on a five.
So if you buy into a three, you offload it real quick. It's like a kind of like a bad mortgage.
Yeah, I mean, and what hedge funds do these days with renewable power investments in California or anywhere for that matter is that they're not sitting on those investments for longer than between 3 and 5 years. Those projects are offloaded within 3 to 5 years. Mm. So whoever actually builds it and operates it, they're not going to own it for more than 3 to 5 years. Somebody else is going to come in to buy it.
Interesting. Yeah. I was thinking, you know, I guess I might want to mention this ahead of time, but you've got all this stuff in your head. I was just thinking, you know, it'd be fun to kind of have you do a little bit of a lightning round for people on all the things that are fake, you know, the myths, the things that the public has been sold,
yeah.
Like put some solar panels on your roof, and then if the power goes out when PG&E shuts you off, you'll be fine.
I'm afraid we would be sued. So those promises come with, like I said before. And I think that's how I protect myself and how we would protect ourselves if we did that kind of a lightning round. And that is that there is a, that there's probably a binder's worth of the fine print that they also hand you after, you know, when you're signing the contract
sure.
with them that says, by the way, if it doesn't perform, you can't sue us. By the way, when PG&E does a PSPS shutoff, you can't sue us. By the way, if you suddenly spring a leak because we put too much weight on the roof, you can't sue us. And by the way, that's your problem, not ours. Those are the other things that people don't realize, that if you put, you know, if they come with a, like, how much does this project weigh that's going to go on your roof? You need to consider those things as well, because I can tell you that on a shake roof, solar panels were not made for shake roofs. They weren't made for other roofs that, you know, you've got some roofs, I've got, if I stare out my window, I can see my neighbors across the street from me. One of them has a composite roof. Another one has a cement tile roof. Another one has a steel roof. I wouldn't dream of putting solar on a steel roof, because the moment that you puncture that steel, that is a 100-year steel, it's ruined forever,
it's
and
leaking.
You probably just ruined the warranties forever.
Right.
On the shake roof, the shake roof isn't built to withstand that kind of weight.
Right.
On the tile roof, It probably, it just in moving up and down to put the thing up there, they're going to crack all of your tiles. And then so you really want to pay attention to what the contract says, if they're going to replace those, or if the moment that you spring a leak, you know, when the rains come, and eventually the rains come, and you're raining inside your house, and you call them and you say, hey, I think that that came from you. And they say, no, no, read the fine print. That's your problem. You're not going to be very happy. And
right.
I have friends who have had exactly that happen. And there's even more, perverse ones. And I won't say the name of the company, but there's one company, that was sued in the litigation, was successful. They were preying on older people. And they're, you know, why are you selling someone who's 75 years old a 25 to 50 year roof?
Yeah,
that's,
you know, it's so wrong. Funny. It's so funny you say that. We have a neighbor across the street from us who, coincidentally, is probably in his 70s, retired, put solar on his roof, I'm going to say 2-3 years ago, and this year he got a new roof. So I don't know if that had anything to do, but it's all what we just said.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened, by the way. I did check.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh!
So
well,
those are the bad things.
When we
are we running? How are we doing with time? Because there's, I think, there's one thing that I would like to add.
Nice.
That, you know, we've beat up energy a little bit on the electricity side, but Governor Newsom did something interesting here in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, hold that thought. We'll do that on the backside of the break, and we'll do that in our last.
Yeah, last segment. Yeah.
12-ish minutes or so. And just points to ponder, maybe not, you know, exposing lies, but potentially just, you know, things people should consider when it comes to energy, like before you buy into the 100% green thing. I mean, the math is important for people to know.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of that kind of stuff. We're probably going to have you back on, too, so, by the way. All right. Hope you're going to send the show to your friends out there. I think people need to know these things. So you can find that at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Little White Lies been around for years. Little White Lies ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Well, that little white lie's catching up to you.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area, KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Make a supersonic man out of you. Don't stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you want to have a good time, just give me a call.
Stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
The song we play when we're talking about President Trump, so you can share that song with him, Jesus, because, you know, you guys both deserve it.
Thank you.
All right, fire away.
Well, in the last week, Governor Newsom, I think, upped the ante. He couldn't increase the RPS anymore because we're already at 100%. So he found the next best thing, and he said, by golly, what we need to do in order to reduce our greenhouse gases is we need to do away with the internal combustion engine.
Yeah.
So by 2035, California won't be able to buy a brand new vehicle that uses gasoline or diesel anywhere in the state. It'll be banned. Of course, he needs the approval of the federal government in order to do that. That's one of the things that people don't realize. As I saw this happen, I just had to put my hands to my head because I thought, wow, think about this. I mean, we've got lots of numbers rolling around in our head. The state of California is facing a $54 billion deficit that the legislature, by the way, still hasn't totally fixed. They kicked the can down the road. a little bit in their thinking that in a Biden administration that we are going to get $1.5 trillion and we're going to right the ship that way. Uh-oh is the reaction if President Trump gets reelected, because highly likely that the Trump administration isn't going to send $1.5 trillion to California.
Probably
for the purposes
not.
Of righting our ship, right? So doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, I don't even know what to call it anymore. But when I saw this, I thought clearly no one in the Newsom administration is paying attention to current events. How many jobs are dependent on the oil industry in California? Well, I would tell you that not as many as we once had, but still quite a bit, about 500,000 jobs. What is the economic engine part of the oil industry in California? Well, it's about $400 billion. That's a lot of money. So you tell me, how, Governor Newsom, are you going to replace that part of the economy? That pillar of the economy would be, I don't know how you replace that. So this is why sometimes, you know, maybe the show should be, let's look at California's regulations and scratch our heads collectively. How do we think that's going to happen? If you were to replace that industry that allows us to do so many different things. So if you take away that part of the economy from some of those communities, let's just look at Bakersfield, for example, as one of the corners of the state that benefits from the extraction of oil, and you devastate it. What would happen to Bakersfield? What are you going to put in place there? You know, environmentalists jump up and down and say, yay, we're going to do this. And then you would say, okay, well, are you going to come and take care of that? Because let's look at reality. Batteries, if you're trading one, you know, form of dependence, if you will, because this is where all of this comes from, right? Greenhouse gas, yeah, but the whole argument started from, we just can't depend on those countries for our oil and for our fuels, so we're going to do it ourselves, and we're going to do it with batteries. Yay, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there are rare earth metals that are used in the production of batteries that come from where? Mm-hmm. How about the Congo? How about China? So you're trading one little bit of dependence for a huge bit of dependence. You're contracting the whole thing. You're shrugging the atlas, right? Atlas shrugged. Now we're going to go to two countries instead of multiple countries to get what we need. What happens when the children in the Congo who are extracting the cobalt that's needed for the batteries decide to go on strike? Oh, wait a minute. Don't we care about children in the state of California? So this is how ridiculous some of this sounds to me when I hear things like that. Well, we're going to get everything from batteries. Okay, well, we don't produce the chemicals that we need to make the batteries here.
So yeah, and that's not even considering the disposal of batteries.
No, exactly. Yeah. So there's the environmental aspect of disposal. You know, well, we're going to build a facility where we can dispose all of this. In 1996, 97, 90, 97, 98, when I was going through my cancer treatments, I remember stumbling onto this, and the Needles dump in Needles, California had been in the news for a long time at that point. So think of, you know, 1998 to today, and we still don't have a low-level nuclear facility where we can take and dispose of medicinal low-level nuclear waste. Where are we going to put those batteries?
Mm-hmm.
For 25 years, we debated where and whether or not Needles, California, would be an ideal place to put low-level nuclear waste. And everyone, I think, thought it was nuclear waste from nuclear power plants. No. Instead, we have millions and millions of barrels strewn throughout the state of California on the back ends of hospitals where this low-level nuclear waste sits. And, you know, my friends looked at me puzzled, and I said, yeah, the needles that they used for the treatment that kept me alive to today are in a barrel somewhere in the back of a hospital because there's no place to take them. So
wow.
if we can't even figure that out when it's medical waste, how are we going to figure out the waste from batteries? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Which is probably going to be 100 times more.
Gives new meaning to the $64,000 question.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's 66 billion, right?
Yeah. No kidding.
66 to $74 billion question, in addition to the 100 billion that our energy costs already today. So I think that when you make pronouncements of that nature, somebody asked me, one of my friends asked me, what do you make of this? And I said, well, I think that Governor Newsom is still running for president. Why else would you make such a pronouncement that is so wild and so far out in the future, fully knowing that you will be nowhere near California at that point in your life in 2035? If he is here, well, that means that the rest of his political career was a failure. It's quite possible. We may know this sooner rather than later. I think it's disruptive in that, now the auto industry has to respond. From the vantage point of the oil industry, he also said in that press conference that in California we would ban fracking by 2024. We could do a whole show on fracking alone, but the extraction of the oil again would be so disruptive of the oil market in that $400 billion pillar of the economy in the state. You're talking about 500,000 jobs, and those are the direct jobs. And then there's probably an equal amount that's ancillary jobs. And then the complete disruption to the transportation sector, that, by the way, there is no infrastructure to do that. And that part of the equation was not calculated by my friends at E3. So that $66 to $74 billion that I talked about earlier in the program, that doesn't include transportation. So how much more will transportation cost us, in the form of how Governor Newsom described it? Because the goal right now, up until the issuance of that executive order, was a goal that was imposed by Governor Brown, which said that by 2025 we would have 5 million all-electric vehicles on the roads. There are 36 million registered vehicles on the road today in California. 36 million. So we're struggling to get to that 5 million number, right? How many all-electric vehicles are actually registered, according to the California Department of Motor Vehicles? 750,000, roughly. So from the time that we imposed that idea, which was back in 2006, to today, we haven't even gotten to 1 million.
Wow.
So I asked another question. I said to myself, who could afford the vehicles, like what Governor Newsom describes, an all-electric vehicle with the infrastructure required in your home to actually do that? Well, you're talking about a Tesla Model S-type vehicle, right? Because it has the range. You need something with a 300-mile range, at least.
It has happened. We are picking a new date. I'm emailing you right now so we can have you back on. Our guest has been Jesus Arredondo. We have run out of time, and we're doing this again. We love you. Thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And you can really find all this at wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week. We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.